Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Aux Cord Approved, the place that we live and breathe music. I'm your host, Isaiah, and today we are here to talk about the Red album, but not any album. It's the Taylor version. I can honestly say this is my first official listen to any Taylor Swift project ever, so I'm very excited to get this started and just break it down. I have a good friend of mine, Shannon Gus. She actually already podcast over here, but she hit me up when I first talked about Aux Cord Approved, and she was like, listen, Taylor's re-releasing this album and I would love to talk about it. And I'm not the biggest country fan, but I know like you can't really put Taylor in like a specific box or anything, so I was like, why not? Aux Cord Approved is about listening to new stuff as well as listening to, I mean, talk about stuff that I'm already aware of. So I brought Shannon on. Shannon, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I really wanted to talk about Red Taylor's version, because she does these re-releases, and then I get very reflective, very nostalgic. I start thinking about like what these albums have meant to me, to like a young version of me, probably how Taylor feels herself when she does these re-releases and thinks back on the person who created this music. I get taken to my 19-year-old self who was listening to this music, and like it happened with Fearless in the re-release she did earlier in the year. It just reminds me how important these songs were to me, and I was like, oh, I'd love a vehicle to talk about it, and you're doing music podcasts on RHAP, which is so exciting, and it just felt like the perfect marriage.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Shannon, I mean, you just spoke about it for a little bit, but before we actually get into the actual project, as a fan, a Swiftie, super fan, what is your history with Taylor?
Oh my gosh, I mean, the history is long and embarrassing. I became a Taylor Swift super fan in 2008. Which was in the midst of her first album, which had, honestly, she became big in Australia with Fearless, which was her second album. Mm-hmm. But my friends had like found her songs, and I was 15, so it was the best thing I'd ever heard. And I still believe like her early music was and remains incredible. Like, I can't wait for the Taylor Swift re-release as well. And from then I was just like, I fell hard and fast, and 15 to 20 year old me was going through it, you know, romantically, as a lot of teenage girls did. And like, I don't even look back at that like, these were silly problems. Like, I look back thinking, like, I was in over my head and Taylor saved me, especially with her first four albums, culminating in Red, which came out in 2012 when I was 19. Like, these heartbreak songs, like, they made me feel so understood. And I love Taylor and continue to love her like a friend. Like, that's how I feel that she helped me. So, yeah, I was a huge fan. I've seen her six times on tour. I touched her hand once. We got sent to the front of the concert, which is a crazy 17-year-old me, I think. We got sent to the front, which was like the best night of my life. And we were like leaning on the stage in the Fearless tour, saw the Red tour. Obviously, every time she came to Australia, I never missed an opportunity to see her. I was in a Taylor Swift cover band where I played Taylor. I had a wig. It's very embarrassing. Those photos are like classified and no one will ever see them, but that is something that I did. And then, yeah, I just absolutely have continued to love her through her entire career. And I'm a huge super fan. I used to write songs as well. I did a Bachelor of Music, and she was my extreme inspiration in everything I did, everything I wrote. If anyone ever listens to it, some of it's on Spotify, not to plug that, but like, if anyone ever listens to it, like, I think like the Taylor inspiration is extremely evident. So yeah, I've just been a huge super fan for now, what is that, 2008 to now, so 13 years, almost 14 years. And yeah, she's absolutely shaped my life in so many ways. So I I love her.
And that's crazy because she's not from the same country, so that's actually awesome. I'm gonna have to hunt you down for those pictures, by the way.
Oh my god, I don't even know that I think I must have deleted them, but yeah, there was a wig involved, and that was 2012, so that was right before this album came out. Mm-hmm. And that was the last year that I did my uni degree, so I kind of just missed out on performing like all the Red songs. But
oh man,
yeah, still love the album.
Now this is interesting because, like I said at the beginning, this is called Taylor's version of Red. Like this is a re-release. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we spoke about it a little bit before we actually start recording, but there's a lot of legal stuff going on with Taylor owning her masters and everything. Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so for anyone who doesn't know and is like Zion, is a little bit new to the Taylor stuff. So the reason that this whole musical journey is happening with the re-releases is that Taylor signed, when she was 15 years old, she signed a deal with Big Machine Records. And I think it was like a 13-year deal for her first six albums. So she retained as the primary songwriter on every song because Taylor writes all of her music. But she retained all of the songwriting credits, but she didn't have the publishing rights. So that's like to the actual recording and to the production of the music. And Big Machine Records held that. They sell that to Scooter Braun, who is one of the many people in Hollywood. I would say one of the few that Taylor is in a feud with based on his part and his support of Kanye and Kim in the very public feud that they had. So when the music was sold to him, she was very powerless in that. And I think that definitely the Swifties' heart, but I think the whole industry's heart kind of went out to her. And there was this kind of sense of anger in that this is probably the most powerful female artist in the world, if not one of the most powerful artists in the whole world. And even she doesn't have the rights to her own music. And there was like nothing that she could do because they wouldn't give her the rights to her music. So her solution to that was to re-record all her music. Basically what she's doing, it's actually a very interesting workaround. So basically what she's doing is she's recording what is pretty much covers of her own music. And by re-releasing that, she, as a songwriter, she's allowed to do that. So she already owns those rights. And now, I'm sorry that if I'm explaining
wrongly,
I'm not a lawyer, but like, yeah. So basically now when she re-records it, she also owns the publishing rights. And it's very, very important to Swifties that once she re-records it, we don't listen to the old stuff. I was at my friend the other day and she was like, Alexa, play this. I was like, make sure it's Taylor's version. Like, don't be giving money to Scooter Braun. So it's very important to us that we listen to Taylor's version once it's out. And yeah, so she's been re-releasing it. And I think that the Swifties are so committed to Taylor and so committed to this cause that had she just re-released it, like exactly what it was, we would have sent it to number one exactly, but Taylor wouldn't do that. Like, she also gave like extreme additional value, videos, new songs. Every song has to be pretty much exactly as was recorded because she doesn't want it to be different, because she doesn't want someone to say, oh, I like the old version better, I'll listen to basically what is now Scooter's version. So it is exactly the same with a slightly better production value. Taylor's voice is slightly different. Like, I as a musician can hear that difference. I don't know if everyone could kind of spot the difference in the old and new stuff, but that part is pretty much the same. But then there is like the vault songs, this additional content, videos, and she kind of puts you back in the new era, new marketing, new merch. And basically we're all like reliving these eras as she releases them, and we're all part of the journey with her now. So it started from this like legal battle, but now it's kind of become like a call to action for all Swifties. And like, I'm really enjoying the re-release project. As I said, like, just like getting into that nostalgia, getting some of these vault songs that were like crazily omitted at the time, but are so good. It really does feel like a gift to Taylor Swift fans. So yeah, that's been her workaround. It's been a very interesting piece of like musical lore and musical news in through the last year that she's been doing this.
It's kind of crazy because, I mean, for me, like, I listen to like a lot of rap, a lot of lo-fi, a lot of different stuff. But with rappers specifically, specifically the young ones, I'm used to seeing stuff like this where they sign these crazy contracts at a young age because they just need to get the money, they're trying to get out their bad situations, and then later down the line when they're successful, like a Uzi, like a Emily Choppa, etc., we see these people, like even the Migos, like they're you'll see them come out and publicly and saying, hey, we finally looked at our contract, we want to get out of this, we want to renegotiate, and it's too late because you already signed on the paper. And it's interesting that a big enough artist like Taylor Swift can actually experience the same thing in a different genre, because she's like a superstar, she's a household name at this point, you know. So it's very interesting how the music industry works, and honestly, it's a big reason why we're starting to see a lot of these artists like becoming like solo indie artists now, not being signing to anybody, because it's a trap nowadays. It's crazy. And you know, something that needs to be fixed. But
No, it's definitely interesting for me from two perspectives. Like the first being someone who was young like Taylor and writing music and trying my hand at like the professional music industry. Like I definitely like remember feeling like you would just do whatever. Like you feel like at the time, Taylor's a 15-year-old girl who's a nobody. Actually, Big Machine Records were also a nobody. Like, they got so lucky. I mean, they discovered her. Like, good on them. But they find Taylor Swift, and she's willing to give anything. She gives her first six albums. She doesn't know that those are going to be, like, six number ones. And at the time, I guess, you know, her parents as well, like, they weren't necessarily in the music industry, so they don't know exactly what they're signing away. And she signed away a lot of her consent on that. And then for it to go to Scooter Braun, I think, like, gave her that personal edge where she felt like, I guess she felt like, I am now Taylor Swift. I don't need to sit back and do this. Like, what do I have? Well, I'm like globally renowned. I could re-release this and take the power back into my own hands. So she had the power to do that. And I think with her privilege and platform, like she often does lead the way. She was doing a lot on like streaming for artists on sites like Spotify. Like she knows that she can kind of go to bat for causes. And even though she's at the forefront of those causes and she's working with things that affect her, it does pave the way and also give light to these things where another young artist might not do that. If I was 15 now, mm-hmm. I would have learned from that, but I didn't know it at the time. And definitely also following her journey. Like when I first started listening to her was the year after she made this deal or thereabouts. She was definitely still a teenager and she wasn't globally a phenomenon at the time. And just like seeing how far she's come. And I want to talk about that with Red because I feel like Red is such a transition album for her and in her musical journey. I feel like I'm saying journey a lot. but it really like feels like that when you've been a part of it with Taylor since the beginning. And she's like, Taylor's 3 years older than me. It's actually her birthday tomorrow. Happy birthday.
Oh, wow.
but like, I feel like I was like, just like that little bit behind her, like following in her footsteps for everything. And like when she writes songs about being 22, like I was about to turn 22, you know, every single mm-hmm. age she was, like that album became, it like perfectly fitted to my age. So I think just like following her in that and starting when she was this young girl that I resonated with so much, like you can kind of see that innocence and how these mistakes were made, but then it came back to hurt a much more successful and older version of her. And she just had the power at that point to take it back. And she, obviously someone came up with this re-release idea and it was a huge success. So she has the power at this point. But we were talking before we were recording about like how interesting the whole re-release genre could be. And if someone like Britney like re-releases an old album, like people would love that. Mm-hmm. So I think she's kind of paving the way in like a new genre because millennials love nostalgia, that there's something here that can be done to have success in this way. And just kind of compound earlier success. So it's really interesting musically as well. I think it might change the face of music in some capacity because it's been that successful and it's so unique.
Now, when we talk about changing music, is this more like genre bending or just industry? Because if you look at Taylor, it's kind of hard to put her in like a certain box. I mean, mm-hmm. like originally when she started out, you could say it was like more country, but it's mm-hmm. now it's like... This specifically with this re-release is more pop leaning and then mm-hmm. you hear a little like rock and you know, it's kind of all over the place a little bit and that's not a bad thing, but is there a specific box in your mind that you could put Taylor in or that could be like that genre bending thing or is this just more like a all around thing for you?
I just think for the re-release genre, she's going to pave the way. But in terms of Taylor, it's interesting that you say that because this is, as you said, the first musical project you've listened to of hers. And Red is the most diverse musically of all of her albums. Like Taylor gets bored with her own sound, I think, or at least maybe she wonders if others are getting bored. I wasn't. I'd be happy for her to do country pop for the rest of her career. She made me love country and then was like, no, I'm done with it. And I was like, no, I'm not. But so she has moved through. She started off extremely country, went to like country pop, went to like full pop, went to like a little bit of like an edge with Reputation, mm-hmm. and now is kind of in the indie genre with her last two albums. And I think that's another part of why these re-releases work because her albums have been so different. And when she goes back to that, like someone like me, I've missed the sound. She's releasing some of these vault tracks that are like proper country. Like I bet you Think About Me, it's like, that is a country song. And I miss it. Like, I think there's a lot of, especially old school super fans like me of Taylor Swift that would say, like, I'd love her to go back and do just like a pure country album. And she's not, but she's re-releasing old country albums, you know, and it's like the closest that we can get to like this old stuff, which is my favorite Taylor Swift stuff and which has more meaning for me than the modern stuff based on just like again, like, I just like that music more. And it just meant so much to me at the time. And it doesn't mean as much to me now, just based on where I am in my life. Like, there's nothing like a vulnerable teenage girl. Like, nothing can match how much that person needs comfort and support in music. So just going back to that, like, it's the closest thing that the old school fans have at the moment to her going back to her country roots and going back to her pop roots, and that she's literally going back to them and then providing additional content. So it's interesting that you say that about Red, because it's definitely not confused, because I think she did it specifically, but it's a transition album for her in so many ways. And musically, like, that diversity really does shine through.
Now, I was actually going to say, as a casual, I can't call myself a Taylor fan, but as the casual listener,
at the end of this podcast, you can.
No, I mean, I can say, because I was at work one time and they had the AMAs on the TV, and she did that huge performance where she was going through, like, all her music through time and all that. I can at least recognize, like, the impact that she has on the industry, you know. So it's really cool to see. And honestly, so much range. She can literally do almost any genre. It's really interesting and impressive, honestly. Now, listening to the themes of her music, because this is like, what, this is like a 30 song this is a 30 song album, is like 2 hours long. So obviously we're not going to touch on every song, but just to base it on a lot of this stuff, because it is a re-release. For my first time listening to a lot of these things, you can honestly hear the main theme is really like about, like, relationships, heartbreaks, love. She briefly touches on stuff like misogyny and, like, sexism and all that stuff, but, like, basically, I think within the old songs, before we even get to, like, the new releases, she has a lot of, like, relationship history, you know. She has a lot of heartbreak. So, like, did this honestly, when you first listened to this album and then even to now, did this really, like, help you get through, like, some situations like that?
Oh, definitely. Like, All Too Well, which is, you know, a lot of people's favorite Taylor Swift song, mine included, that became, like, the classic, that became, like, the key breakup song of all time. And I can't even overstate, like, how meaningful that song was for me, and so much of it. Like, even, like, some of, like, the more middling tracks, which I still love. Like, truly, I think most of the songs on this whole album are amazing. But, like, I Almost Do is a great one. For, like, 22, for example, like, that just defined the era, like, when I was in my early 20s. But, yeah, there's a lot of breakup songs. And it gave her a bit of a reputation. And that's why I talk about the transition phase that I feel Red and Speak Now, which was her previous album. That's what that represents to me, because she starts off young and she's, like, writing songs about, like, boys in school. And it's very innocent and it's very intimate. Like, she's writing songs about, like, with their names, but no one knows who these people are. And then she becomes, like, astronomically famous, and it happens so quickly. And she's still a teenager for a lot of the stuff, and in her early 20s. And now she's writing songs, like, in this one album, there's songs about Joe Jonas still. Somehow she's still writing about Joe Jonas in Red. Jake Gyllenhaal is, like, the main one. John Mayer's in this album. And it's interesting because she, I don't feel, had found a way to claim that yet. And in her next album, which is 1989, that's when she starts kind of talking about, she kind of, like, is using humor to poke fun at her own reputation, something like Blank Space, but she claims it back. She claims back the way that she's perceived, which becomes just, like, a massive part of pop culture. And I don't think that she has that as much in Red and Speak Now. Like, she still has the intimacy of writing so much about these relationships in, like, really such detailed terms. Everyone knows who she's talking about. But then she has the astronomical platform where it's a bigger deal than anything, and these relationships are in the public interest. But then she's still super young. She's way less experienced than a lot of these exes and a lot of the media that are painting her out to be a certain way. So to me, there's, like, a clash of that naivety, that innocence, that inexperience, and being one of the most famous people in the world, which by the time of Red, she is. And it's a really interesting phase for me, because I do really see that transition, and I see that she gets a lot more mature and claims it a lot later. But she's kind of struggling in that. And she's not, even though she's writing about Jake Gyllenhaal, like, she's not so far removed from us that it feels distant. And we could still really relate to that music. So, yeah, it's a really interesting one, because she still resonated and continues to resonate so much because she's a brilliant songwriter. But I can see her own struggles in this. Like, she's not writing about Jake Gyllenhaal for the clicks and the likes. You know, she's writing about Jake Gyllenhaal because he really broke her heart. And she's still that girl, like, who 4 years ago was sitting in math class writing our song. So it's a really interesting album for me for that, because it's really that, like, very raw, very real girl heartbreak. But then also she has some of the biggest spotlights in the world on her, because she is at this point Taylor Swift. And that means a lot. It's a very, very interesting album from that perspective.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Now, before we get to any of the new stuff, because I want to dedicate a whole section to that. With these OG releases, as a new person, like I said, like I already recognize some of like those radio, like mainstream ones, like We Were Never Getting Back Together.
Yeah.
I Knew You Were Trouble, all that stuff. Now, like we said, these are made to sound the same bar. Any of these on the second like release to you, like like maybe she should have kept it a little bit like I don't know, like does she experiment a little too much here, or do you like some of them better than like the original? Like for me personally, I went back and forth between the original and this one. For this, I didn't care too much for Stay, I'm not gonna lie.
Okay. Very country.
Yeah,
very pop. Fun one to play on guitar, though.
I believe it. But yeah. What are some of your like favorites? In comparison to like the old ones with the re-release,
I think the re-release in general, she sounds better. Like you like you hear like especially as a vocalist, you're like ooh, like her voice like sounds so much better. But like these songs did not need to be re-recorded. Like these were number one selling albums. It's being done for the legal reason. So. It's nothing where I feel like, oh yeah, this is what it needed to be. You know, like, these are some of my favorite songs of all time then. I just feel like now they're that much better. And it's also about what it means. There's like slightly better production value. But for me, it's not that different. But it also gives, I think, the opportunity for new songs, well, old songs, I guess, but for them to just kind of take up a different space. Like, as you're saying, so you know, like, I Knew You Were Trouble. We Are Never Getting Back Together, which was a lead single, and Taylor has like, I don't know, some misses probably in her lead singles. I wouldn't have necessarily gone with those songs and some of the other albums as well, but like by putting out these songs now, again in a different vein where like social media can take them, where like something like All Too Well, it has a legacy about it and kind of can become the main song of the new version of Taylor's version, I think it just kind of takes up that different space and gives some of them a new space to shine. Because as you're saying, like as a casual, everyone kind of knows the same songs of Taylor Swift, and a lot of people who haven't really dived into it may judge her by those songs, but she's always been so much more than that. And for a song like All Too Well to get a video or a short film and to really be taking up the space, like I think just kind of the conversation around the songs might be the most important part of the re-releases of like the old content that is not vault tracks, for example. So yeah, I think that's really important. But in terms of like musicality, as I said, it can't be that different, because you don't want anyone to ever prefer the old song, because then you fail, because then Scooter Braun gets money. So she's very aware of that. It's a very interesting like tightrope that she's walking with that.
Now, did we like some of these new features she put on? Because we saw a lot of Ed Sheeran in this album, right?
There's well, there's now two songs, yeah. I love Ed Sheeran as well. So I'm an Ed Sheeran fan. Like, Everything Has Changed has always been like one of my absolute favorite songs from the album. And she does some stuff with him as well, like later in her career. And I think like bringing him back for the Vault songs, like, well, for one Vault song, I don't like it as much as Everything Has Changed, but I think it does speak to like where she sat in the era and that like extended relationship. It just kind of, for people who are fans of that partnership, it just like hits you kind of in the heart. But Everything Has Changed, like, I feel like that is one of her most musically brilliant songs. Some of those lyrics I think are like truly poetic. Like that's one of my absolute favorite ones. Like, did you like the ones with Ed Sheeran?
I didn't mind them. I mean, they were definitely different. You got to be in a certain vibe, but I didn't mind them. I thought they were cool.
Yeah. I want to know, like, for you as a casual, like, what songs stuck out to you?
So, all right. So, honestly, most of the songs that I liked, I enjoyed the newer ones. And I actually put them down here. I thought that Message in a Bottle was a pretty
good song. So good. So fun.
I thought Forever Winter was pretty good because it sounded very vibrant, very fluid. I mean, let's talk about it. How do you feel about it?
Forever Winter, so this is a Vault song. This is my favorite of the Vault songs from Red. And often with the Vault song, so the whole point is she wrote them at the time and she didn't release them. Mm-hmm. And it happened with Fearless the first time she did a re-release where you're like, wait, this is a really good song. Like, why did it not make the cut? Like Mr. Perfectly Fine at the time, I'm like, 15-year-old me would have really appreciated this song. And Forever Winter, it's hard to kind of explain my reaction to it. Like, I felt a little angry. Not to be strange about it, but it's a very important song. It's about like mental health and like suicidal ideation and like supporting a friend through that. And I thought like, wow, it felt a little irresponsible. Firstly, it's an incredible song. Like, I don't understand why it didn't make it on the original album. And also I felt like you had this music and someone might've really needed it. Like, I needed it, you know, I needed it in the last 9 years. And it was right there and it wasn't released. And I'm glad that I have it now. But I think that like with the Vault songs, like, it's amazing that she has some really good content to release as part of this and that it has value, but I just don't understand why that value wasn't recognized in 2012 and why that song wasn't released. And I don't think it was beyond her, because I think it's kind of a spiritual successor to Tie Together with a Smile, which is from her first album, which is about a friend that's struggling with an eating disorder. So it's not like new territory for her. Yeah. It's not like that was too deep for her. Like, I feel like she could have gone there and I feel like it would have helped a lot of people. So I'm just confused about why the world didn't have it for 9 years. But I do love that song. I think that's absolutely one of the best songs on the whole album, let alone from the Vault tracks. I'm just so confused about why it didn't make it. And then like Message in a Bottle, I think is like a very fun pop song. I think it might have fit in better on her next album, on 1989. I'm also confused, like in a less like meaningful way, but it's a really fun song. I'm just confused about why it didn't make either of those albums. But I guess, I don't know, there's a whole process of it that I don't understand, but it's a little baffling to me.
I mean, there's a huge chance that, like, there was someone in her ear or, like, someone in the room that was like, ah, this is good, but it doesn't fit the theme of, like, the album or something. Yeah. Maybe hold it off. Like, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of situations where, this leads to a lot of artists actually leaking their own music and calling it like leakers or whatever. But like a lot of these people are chirping in these artists' ears and saying, this isn't really like, this isn't good for the image. This isn't good for like the album's like theme and all this stuff. So they just never release it. And they usually end up getting leaked, quotation marks. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it was an artist.
Well, that's interesting as well. Yeah. I mean, like that again speaks to her agency. It's like, how much agency does she have? Early on, I mean, you like to think a lot. This comes after Speak Now, which is an album she wrote every song of with no co-writing credits. So she's always been in the driver's seat of her own music, or that's what it's always felt like to me as a fan. But I guess you never really know what's happening behind the scenes. And as she's becoming like the biggest pop star in the entire world through this album, you wonder about how much is her and how much is kind of, you know, her record agency or manager, whatever's happening with that. Like, even in her documentary, there's some stuff around politics and like what she can post and kind of who she feels like she needs to be. And she definitely reached that point way later. And definitely through this era, there's some sort of, not that I'm saying it's not her fault that Forever Winter wasn't on the album, but it just is interesting that there was like some sense of like external control definitely happening and it wasn't all necessarily her. So I'm not sure. It's definitely an interesting thing as well about Red. As we talk about this transition phase, it's not just about her and her relationships and her writing and her age. It's also like, yeah, how much agency did she have in her own career, which is something very interesting to talk about as well. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, it's honestly showing you no matter how big you are, you're not always going to be like in the driver's seat. So it's crazy.
It feels like she is now, but I guess you never know. And then she'll do a documentary in like 5 years where she's like, still wasn't, you know, like you just never know.
Yeah, I mean, well, she's signed to Republic now, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, what, Drake, Ariana, you know, there's people over there. So, I mean, maybe she has more creative freedom now than she did before. But yeah, I mean, specifically with those small little like recording companies that like no one really knows yet, like they take advantage of artists all the time. So who knows?
Yeah, it feels like now she just does what she wants. She'll be like, I'm dropping an album tomorrow. And you're like, oh, what? And she's like, I just wanted to. Yeah. Like, I'm doing a movie. Like, you know, she'll do like, it feels now like she can do what she wants. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, like, yeah, some of this was definitely calculated, but she as well is like such a master of marketing that you always wonder like how much of it comes from her. Even yeah. we can talk about like the marketing of Red Taylor's version. Like, I don't know, she's very good at it and she's very calculated in that way. So it really does feel like a lot of it does come from her, but it also was probably like a very large scale production. And what I'm saying is that production made the wrong decision with some of these vault tracks by not releasing them 9 years ago. Crazy.
I thought The Very First Night was a fun song too, right?
Yeah, that's a fun one. That one hasn't hit me as much. Like the two I felt that have been on repeat for me of the vault tracks have been Message in a Bottle and Forever Winter. Mm-hmm. Because I'm also the kind of person where if I find a song I like, I will listen to it like 100 times in a row and like not yeah. really need to. So those have been the two. But it's like it's really good across the board. Some of them are like songs that were released for other artists at the time. Mm-hmm. Babe, Better Man were songs that I've heard before from like the other artists, and it was like Little Big Town and Sugarland, because I was like again following all of Taylor's songs, and now she's like released them herself. Also, I Bet You Think About Me, which had the video, so it's basically like the single from the vault tracks, I think is really fun. Like it's not like an outstanding show, but it's just so country that you're like, she's lean again, it's like that marketing where she like knows that people want that and she like leans into it. Mm-hmm. And she got me, so she's right in that. Yeah.
Other than Ed, who was the other feature?
Phoebe Bridgers
and then yeah. Chris Stapleton. How do you feel about them?
The Phoebe Bridgers one I think is interesting because I think that that song is about so it's nothing new. It's kind of about, and hearing her talk about in some interviews, about kind of the cyclical nature of fame and feeling left behind as you age. And I think like collaborating with a younger female artist again kind of claims that back. And mm-hmm. it's really interesting as well because she's looking back at that where Taylor in her early 20s wrote it, and now Taylor, 9 years on, knows that she had that staying power and she can kind of like empower younger artists. So again, like looking at it with that like older lens, I think is really interesting. It's not like my favorite again of the vault tracks, but mm-hmm. it again speaks to that marketing and just like how she's thinking about it on every level.
Okay. Now, is Taylor single right now?
So Taylor is happy in love, which is an interesting one for her. yeah, like when I listen to her Fall in Love and her songs, I remember listening to Call It What You Want in my car. Mm-hmm. I like left work to listen to it and I was like crying because yeah. I was like, oh, she found her guy. and I like hate to be so dramatic, but because I met my husband shortly after Red came out. So Red was like mm-hmm. the last one that like helped me through it. And then I like yeah. didn't need her anymore. And I'd be like, Taylor, come on, let's get to the point where we're at the same. And then she did. And then she released Lover, which was like her In Love album with the person that she's still with, her long-term relationship, like a month before my wedding. And I was like, yes, we're synced back up, Taylor. So yeah, it's just about being part of that journey. But she still had like multiple albums where she was still like going through it after it.
Yeah.
And you're like, Taylor, let's find someone now. Let's be happy. And she still had like so many mishaps, but
I was gonna say like I hope so, because I was saying this during the Tyler's review, but I feel this way here too. I feel like Taylor needs a hug sometimes because yeah. it's like definitely, because it's wild because she has this ability that like she is talking about some of the most depressing things I've ever heard, right?
Yes.
But at the same time she makes it sound fun and upbeat, and like I don't know how she does it, but she does it very well. Like We're Never Ever Ever Getting Back Together. Mm-hmm. Like that's so sad, but like everyone's like screaming and jumping probably. Like at some point I gotta go look at a video for Concert or something, because I remember you were talking about that. But how do you think she does that? Like it's interesting. Like, is it the instruments, or maybe it's just like the way that she delivers it? I don't know. What do you think?
I think Taylor knew that like she couldn't just do All Too Well. Like All Too Well is like actually sad, and that's the kind of song that you like are hugging a pillow and like crying. Whereas like when I was young, like that wasn't enough. Like that wasn't the only heartbreak song I needed. I also needed like a song that I could like jump around with my friends to and just be like really angry. And I needed songs that I could like blast while driving in the car, because these like the albums were like just got my license. So there was like a lot of that happening with like Speed Now and Red, of like just driving around. Which is something I wouldn't do now. I would never just drive around. But driving was novel. So I think she knows how to do that, where she like accesses like all of the primary emotions, basically. And it's not just like sadness, it's also anger, heartbreak, like just getting all those feelings out. And like that is what Red is about. It's about love feeling red. You used to think that Taylor had synesthesia because everything was like, you know, and that's what the title track is about, is like love feeling just like red, and it's all of these like red hot emotions, and that's basically what ties this otherwise quite diverse album together. Which is an interesting thing that I wanted to talk about, because, you know, I talked about like the distance that Taylor has from her album and the way that she can kind of release it now and not be in it. And she talked about how like she was crying after like every interview during this era, and now she's fine. And it's a different one. And for Red, that to me has had the most meaning, because she has actually undercut this entire album in a future album, in Lover, which I discussed previously, the album that she released before my wedding. She has a song called Daylight where she said, "I once believed love would be burning red, but it's golden like daylight." So in that one line, which is one of my favorite of her lyrics, she like undercuts this entire album that like, this is not what love is. Love is not red. And in re-releasing it now, I could not get that line out of my head, because I knew that Taylor, in re-recording it, is aware that this is not what love should be. This is what like toxic love is. And that's what it was at the time. As you said, she needed a hug. Like, she really did. And like 19-year-old me did too. And this was the hug that I got. We were like hugging each other through the music. But like, for me to listen back and know that like these songs are great, and I look back at what they meant to me, but I also know that she was like, she was wrong, and that's what love is. And she knows she was wrong in that. And she has since, in her lyrics, undercut that this is legit and accurate in what love should be. That to me has just been so meaningful in the re-release, because I know how she's viewing it with that distance, and that it's something for that like was important to her younger self, but that she's grown well past, and that has a lot of significance for me. So that lyric, like, I can't listen to the re-release without hearing like, "It's golden like daylight," because I know that she sees it really differently. And that's like had a lot of meaning for me in listening to the re-release.
I'm curious, did you play any Taylor during your wedding?
Weirdly not. The band might have played like "Shake It Off." Like, I think people were surprised. In my wedding video, I did have "Lover." So I like saved it for the video, but I didn't play it as a first dance or anything, because it also like the "Lover" songs came out like so late, and then her other songs are like so sad and so heartbreak. So like, it's not, you know, it's much more for like younger me. But like the "Lover" album was definitely, like, she had like paper rings and stuff. Like, it was like, it felt like a wedding album, and it was released right before my wedding, and it felt like it was for me, because that's the relationship that I have with Taylor Swift, where it feels that personal. But yeah, it's a really, really interesting one, because is she in a relationship now? Like, she is, and it defines her. Like, in her recent stuff as well, she says that like she writes about characters, not as much her. Like, that's how much her stuff has changed, because she's not in it. You might listen to some of her new stuff and think she needs a hug. Some of that is still true about like fame and platform, and definitely like this legal dispute, but a lot of it is like, it's that distant. But like, for Red and for Speak Now and all her early stuff, like, she's in it. She writes from like such extreme first person experience, and it's so intimate, and that's why people feel that connected to her, because they like know her soul. And that's why you're saying, like, the fact that you want to give her a hug, like, her whole career is based on that. Like, the fact that people wanted to hug her through the music and, like, felt her and understood her, and she, like, understood them right back. Like, that was the key of all of these early albums.
So, Shannon, I can call myself a temporary Swiftie. Because I'm not too familiar with her discography. How many more albums is she going to be re-releasing?
So she has to release six. Her first six albums were the ones that were under the... So she's done two. Mm-hmm. So she did Fearless, which was her second album earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And now she's done Red. So it's going to be interesting because, 1989, Reputation are obviously later. So she might want to wait a while, because the nostalgia is such a massive factor. So if they're more recent, that just won't hit as hard. But then she's going to go back to like Taylor Swift. And I've thought about this, and like, I think there are some songs that I think she like will disagree with now.
Yeah.
There are some songs that are a bit more, you know, like, and she probably did drive this a bit, but in terms of like, you know, when like your man leaves you for a woman, blame the man. But there was a lot of like, and we did, but like, there was also some like women blaming, and like some of her songs that were maybe a little slut shamey, and some lyrics like she's better known for the things that she does on the mattress, which is a great song. And I want her to re-release it. It's one of my favorite songs. Like, she was part of a extensive song war with Joe Jonas, because 2010 was a crazy time, but she won. But I think she's going to like have a little bit of problems with some of her old lyrics. And I'm really interested to see how she addresses that. I think Fearless was easy. I think Red was also easy, other than the Jake Gyllenhaal backlash, which we can talk about. But I'm really interested in how like the re-releases, like how she kind of stands by some of those songs, but also needs to legally re-release them exactly as they were. So I'm fascinated about how it's going to be going forward.
I'm glad you said that, because I totally forgot to ask this. Did she rewrite any lyrics in this album?
No.
Okay.
No, not as far as I know. Yeah.
All right. I was just curious about that. Dude, that's so interesting. Okay. Is there anything else I need to know about Taylor Swift, Shannon?
Well, I mean, something that's been like a big deal about this one, and I know it's been a lot of the cultural conversation, is like how it drags all the subjects back and all the memes around like Jake Gyllenhaal. People hate Jake Gyllenhaal again.
Yeah.
John Mayer, like, well, John Mayer doesn't like, I mean, it's been like obviously like this like public relationship from like a decade ago. And he's got some songs in this. Like, I think I knew what Trouble was about John Mayer, but Speak Now, which is the album before this, which will be re-released, is. That's all John Mayer, and it's like brutal. Like the song "Dear John," like he'll wish he was Jake Gyllenhaal. Like how brutal, you know. Some younger people who maybe don't know how intense that was, and like any vault tracks around that, it's gonna be a lot. And from you watching it from the side and just seeing like this wave of hate against people like Jake Gyllenhaal, like how do you perceive that? Because I know she's gotten a bit of backlash about that, and like basically bringing these guys back into it and it being this like. Somewhat negative thing, and it was so long ago, and get over it, etc. Like, how do you see that?
So, before even listening to this album, before we even decided to talk about this, like, I remember when the week this came out, before Oxcord Approved existed, I remember when this came out, and I remember seeing a lot of tweets, basically, first of all, signifying that, oh, everyone's girlfriends are going to be crying, or they were dragging people like Jake, and I didn't know who these people were. So I'm like, ooh, like, you know, I wonder how they feel. I'm watching from the sidelines at least. I wonder how these guys feel now that it's like years later and they're kind of getting dragged for like some old problems. Like, I wonder if this is like, if people are like harassing them or not. I don't know. I mean, I do think
people were like John Mayer said, like, people are harassing John Mayer.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, that's kind of what happens with stan culture a little bit. I mean, you know, it's up to the artist to tell people, hey, don't bother them. Or maybe they're like, eh, I don't care. But I mean, it's expected when it comes to stan fans, because I think stan fans with any artist, honestly, they will ride and die for that artist no matter what. So, I mean, I expected it. But I do remember seeing a lot of like hate waves, and I remember seeing a lot of people basically tweeting about this stuff and like, oh, like I'm in my feelings again because of this Taylor re-release. So from the outside perspective, I thought it was like a little interesting to watch, not really knowing the context. But now that I do, it makes a lot more sense.
I don't know, because I feel like we hated Jake Gyllenhaal at the time. Like, I don't know what's, like, being added to it. Like, we should definitely talk about All Too Well and that, the new 10-minute version, because that definitely added some context to that. But, like, I remember, again, sitting in the car, spent a lot of time in cars, listening to The Moment I Knew, which was a deluxe track, and she plainly says, like, he didn't come to my birthday party, and my best friend and I were sitting there, and she's like, why didn't he come to her birthday party? I'm like, I don't know. And we hated Jake Gyllenhaal from then. I feel like I knew everything I needed to know about how he treated her, and I've, like, made my peace with her relationship with Jake Gyllenhaal. So I don't know, like, I feel like some of it is a meme. Like, some of it is a joke, like, we hate Jake Gyllenhaal, like, then that's fine. But then I think some people, like, actively now, like, really do hate Jake Gyllenhaal. And there's a lot of stuff around, like, some really creepy stuff with age. Again, like her inexperience of what, as I'm saying, like her being in that transition phase where like she was like one of the biggest stars in the world, but these men had like a ton more experience than her. And there was like this age gap. And it's hard for me to think about the fact that she was in her high school classrooms just like a couple of years before this, just as an absolute nobody.
It's but crazy,
it was just
right?
such a quick rise to fame. Like it put them on a more even playing field, but it just wasn't.
Yeah.
So people are like, I guess in ways rightfully mad for 2012 Taylor Swift. Because it's not petty. That's what, like, as well, I feel like what I went through, it wasn't petty at all. It feels like it should be petty because teenage heartbreak seems like the most, like, irrelevant thing, right, that you just get over. But that's not true. Like, it feels like a lot at the time. And honestly, looking back, like, it is a lot. It's a lot for young people to go through and what she went through. So people are actually mad. And then people blame Taylor Swift because people are mad. And she does market and profit off the collective anger and rage. So it's a complicated one for me. Like, she can't re-release these tracks without bringing them back in. She has to re-release the tracks legally. Red is about what Jake Gyllenhaal did to her. Like, how she can't avoid it, and she does add to it, and she knows people are fascinated by it. But I would say, like, don't be sending hate to John Mayer and Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, they know what they did, and Taylor Swift did end up being Taylor Swift, and she's, like, very happy and in love. Like, there's no way she still cares about Jake Gyllenhaal. So maybe we should all just take like a collective breath and be like, oh, that's interesting that this art came out of it without, you know, kind of eviscerating these human beings. But it's a very, very interesting one. Definitely a lot of memes around, like, which I am that meme. It's like happily married me just like screaming these breakup songs as if I'm 19 again. Like that is how it feels.
I'm actually looking at the lyrics right now. It's interesting because like it starts off, oh, you're just meeting this guy. She's talking about how they were dancing in her kitchen and all stuff. But like this area right here, and you call me up again just to break me like a promise.
That's one of my favorite lyrics.
Like, oh, like so casually,
cruel in the name of being honest. Yeah.
You put you in your feels. I can see why people can really resonate with a lot
of stuff. That line as well. I'd like to be my old self again, but I'm still trying to find it. That one, that line, I can't explain what that line meant to me because I completely had lost myself at that time. It really was one of the hardest things I'd ever gone through. And that feeling, it's that lack of agency that she speaks to. It's actually kind of ironic because the whole reason we're here talking about a re-release is her own lack of agency. And the lack of agency she had at the time was how she was being treated by men. And it resonated fully for me at the time. And I'd like to be my old self again, but I'm still trying to find it. When you can't find yourself and you don't know yourself, and so much of like your growth at that time is, and for her, which was like a very strange growth, like going through pivotal years of her life through this like extremely strange experience of becoming famous, and you just like lose yourself in that and you don't have any control over it, and you'd like to find yourself but you don't even know who you are. That lyric has always got me. Like that whole bridge version is truly, I think, like some of the best lyrics ever. It's like such an amazing song, All Too Well.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, you know what, she's really a good music writer as well, because it's hard to believe, but like a lot of these new artists do not write their own music. So it's good to see someone actually do it from like their heart and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Because All Too Well. So if we should talk about that. So
that's what I was just about to say. So go ahead, break it down.
Yeah. So to explain All Too Well, like she describes it as the people's song. It became a phenomenon, but it was never a single or anything like that. But like every Swiftie loves All Too Well, like pretty much. Like if you were to ask, it definitely, for me, it probably is my favorite of her songs. It's definitely top three. And if you were to ask most Taylor Swift fans, like it features up there as like a top five song. But it was never, it's not We're Never Getting Back Together. Like if you haven't dived into the album, like you don't know it, but the people took it. And now in the re-release, she has kind of given it that weight. And there was always the rumor, I think she like let it slip in an interview, that there was a longer version of it, which is crazy because it is such a long song, and it's such like a lyrically dense song. You're like, oh my God, how much more venting does she need to do? But basically in this, one of the main talking points of Red Taylor's version was like the excitement around her releasing the longer version of All Too Well. And she did it with like a short film, which was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, also sparked a lot of the anger at Jake Gyllenhaal, because it became a lot more specific about age. It was portrayed as like extremely toxic, which All Too Well, like the relationship does seem bad, but I don't know if it seems as toxic. And now, there's like this 10-minute song. So what did you think of like the 10-minute version? Like, I don't know if you had like a preference for the OG.
I didn't really have much to go off of. Like, I like the OG because it's shorter, but I do think that the 10-minute, it has a lot more feel to it. It's just that since it's 10 minutes, there's like a lot more to digest.
It's a lot.
I mean, I've only had like a week, so like I would have to listen to it a bunch of times. But
it's a long song and a 30-song album. So.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like already two hours, and then the 10 minutes is like literally the song. But no, I do appreciate the artistry with it, and then that she actually puts more detail and like a lot more. It feels like a lot more emotion and heart within this portion. Is this the original release of the 10-minute, or do you think
that's new?
Okay.
No, this is new. I mean, for me, this might be controversial, but like, I really like the 10-minute version because obviously she's amazing, and the new lyrics are great. But I can't imagine myself ever listening to it by choice over the shorter All Too Well for me. I mean, All Too Well is like one of my favorite songs of all time. Like, I wasn't lacking anything from it. I didn't feel like I needed more, and I still don't. It's a perfect song for me, and I feel like the new lyrics they do paint her trauma or her emotion in that, because they are much more specific. But I do feel like it was this really universal breakup song, and it loses some of that because it's now more specific. Like now it's usually about age, which is not something that I could have really wasn't relevant to me at the time, and continues not to be relevant to me. So I just can't imagine being like, I'm going to listen to this 10-minute version where I feel like All Too Well is like my favorite song ever, and I'll just listen to the original version. I'll like watch the short film for sure. Mm-hmm. I might listen to it sometimes, but I just feel like 9 times out of 10, I'm going to the original one. But I like that it exists, and it's something that has been just like such a big part of like Taylor Swift lore. So I like that like pop cultural part of it. But for me, like All Too Well, I don't need a new version of it. Like I love the version that exists, and I have the 9 years, and I hate change. So, and this is why she had to keep all the songs the same. Like she gives you Taylor's version of All Too Well, and that's what I'll listen to. But by changing too much, then you always risk someone like me being like, oh, I like the old one better. And then you're giving money to Scoot Abroad. So this is how she has had to balance that. But yeah, I mean, it's still obviously an incredible song, and it's like the pinnacle breakup song of all time. Yeah.
One, YouTube, so you don't have to listen to them. Don't give them
money. Yeah, that's true. If you're going to listen to Scoot Abroad, like Scooter's content at this point, like, pirate it. you know, like, but then you also take her, like, she also had some of them. Some of the rights, but anyway, it's a confusing thing. Like as well, there's still 4 albums that we're still a little guilty, but I'm like, I want to listen to it. So,
but yeah. I will YouTube say, is. Usually when artists do things like this, because it's crazy, I can keep comparing these two. With the last album that I did, the Tyler one, he actually had a 9-minute song on there too, and I think when these artists do release super long songs like that, they're doing it with the assumption that one, not going to get that many like streams and all that because it's so long. The replayability of it, obviously, it's not going to be there because, like I said, it's so long. But I think this was actually something probably just for the fans, the super fans at least at that point, because you know you're not going to make much money off of it, but the fans will appreciate the sentiment, you know. So I think that was definitely for people like you, Shannon, who would definitely probably like, oh, okay, this is what she was alluding to back then. But you know.
I wonder as well if, like, it's a product of the time. Well, like, people have been asking for this for years, but I wonder about, like, long songs. Like, there's something about streaming culture and stan culture where there is more agency for the listeners. So, like, if you don't want to listen, you don't. But there's, like, this other option, whereas, like, the music's more in your hands. Like, at the time, firstly, she was less of a big deal. Now, again, she can do whatever she wants.
Yeah.
She was still extraordinarily famous, like, you know, to try and, like, compare. But it doesn't need to necessarily be a single. And even now, like, people might play, the 10-minute All Too Well on the radio just because it is Taylor Swift in 2021 and just because it has, like, that context behind it. So I think, like, stan culture and streaming culture makes longer songs maybe, not that they weren't, like, in the Bohemian Rhapsody, like, you know, like, there has been things through time. But I think, like, there is that stan culture of today. And then there also is, like, when artists just make it really big and are like, now I'm doing my 10-minute song.
Yeah. So
that might be kind of interesting.
See, I mean, I think with like radio, first of all, I don't listen to much radio. But
I don't drive anywhere anymore. Yeah, never in the car now.
But it's like, you know, that's like what? So I average song like 2 to 3 minutes. You got to think about how many slots that's taking. That's 10 whole minutes. So I can see why they possibly wouldn't.
Yeah.
But with the streaming thing, like I said, you just really got to have a lot of faith into your fans to like really play it. But like I said, this is a 30 song album, so it's not like she was like depending solely on that one. So, you know, I think it was like literally just like, hey, gift for me to you. You know, that's cool. I wonder how she felt. It's specifically not even just with this, but like most of the songs re-recording a lot of probably like buried feelings that she doesn't have anymore, like probably like resurfacing maybe. But I it's interesting.
Yeah, like as a listener, I go through that too. Fearless was a big one for me. Like Fearless,
yes,
that was the first really re-release, so I hadn't known what it was gonna feel like, and that was an album that came out when I was 15. That album was like salvation for me. I can't explain what Fearless meant to me, all of them. But like, 15-year-old me also going through it, extremely depressed teenager, I can say that I was. And I was like, I just felt 15 again. And I felt like so bad for 15-year-old me. I just wanted to give her a hug. And I feel like I was going through it. And Red really was a different experience for me because I feel like Taylor gave me that distance. Like whenever I felt emotional about it, I would just like look at my husband and think like it's golden like daylight. I know that it's like the sappiest thing, but I just feel like that line and the way that I feel Taylor is growing from it, like it gave me that permission to be like, you're looking back at it, but you're not in it. And neither is she. So I think that there's some really interesting stuff there. And like for Fearless, she recorded a song called 15, which, you know, she wrote around that being 15, but now she's recording that being double that age and the way she looks back at that. And I think the Swifties know and must recognize like what that means for her and like what those feelings are. But at the same time, she can also be detached from it to a degree and like have just like more solid marketing around it and just like, not be as emotionally tied to it, which is a good thing as well. So it's such an interesting thing, the re-releases. Like, I feel like every single time I'm like, oh no, I'm going back in time against my will. Like, I'm not part of this era. Like, I don't know that I want to be. And then she just releases it and you just have to like go on the journey with her. So it's been a very interesting ride, the re-releases.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Out of, I mean, obviously this is a re-release. We can let's replace the original first two albums that she recorded. But where does the Red re-record or re-release? Sorry, the Taylor version of Red. Where does that rank among all of Taylor's albums to you?
Well, Red itself was always my second favorite album after Speak Now, and this I think only adds to it. It's gotten more critical acclaim even than Red did. You know, it's had. Like also the records that set, like streaming records, like it's just like these are old songs, and it, like that's you know how like the impact. But I would say that for me, it probably still sits there at number two. I do think it's a better album than Red, so it would replace Red now as number two for me. Yeah. I'm really interested in the Speak Now Taylor's version because that's my favorite Taylor Swift album, and I feel like that's going to be just so epic. But I do think Red is really, like, I've always thought it's just one of her best albums. Like, she gives everyone a little bit of everything because it is so diverse. It has some of her best songs, All Too Well being, like, one of her absolute best songs. It's, like, it's such a, like, a triumph of pop, I've always felt. And I also, like, I was going through all the songs, and I was, like, honestly, most of these songs are, like, very listenable. Like, I wouldn't skip almost any of these songs. Like, I think there's, like, of the songs I don't really like, I have Holy Ground, never really liked it, The Last Time, and Girl at Home, of like the original 20 songs. I was like, I haven't really liked these songs since 2012. I'm probably not going to start now. But still, that's like, there's like 16 or 17 of the original album of 20 tracks that are like really solid. Like, that's amazing. Like, these are long albums. This is like a lot of music. And then of the additional content, like I really like a lot of the songs as well. And I do feel like Forever Winter, Message in a Bottle are like some of the best. So... It's a very good album, I feel.
I'm just checking real quick. Did Red get nominated for anything Grammy-wise this year?
Yeah, it was nominated at the time for, like, Best Album.
Yeah.
So I wonder as well, like,
if they're doing anything awards, 2021.
What that'll mean for, in terms of re-releases. Because it does feel like, it does feel like, so it had, like, the Taylor's version had, like, most song debuts in the top 100 in a week. The largest sales week of 2021, top stream female album in a day and a week ever, top the Billboard charts, top global charts. And you're like, this feels like cheating. Of course, like, it was the most song debuts. People already loved this music. But yeah, that's why I think, like, re-release culture, like, it's a big deal. And I do think that Britney should do, like, a re-release. I think a lot of these, like, nostalgic... Like, people need to capitalize on nostalgia. Is that not what we're doing in, like, everything? West Side Story remake, Sex and the City revival. Everything is a revival.
See, I feel like it's okay. It depends on the circumstances. Like, all right, I think Britney and Taylor can get away with it. Good reason.
Yeah.
I don't want it to get to a point where we're looking at it like a movie, for example, because, like, they're remaking movies now. It just feels like recycled. But I mean, I feel like if it's warranted, like Taylor, for example, because she can't own her master, you know, Britney, she had her whole situation. I completely get it. But like, if I see like some random person, like, I don't know, like what Bruno's doing fine in life. What if Bruno just randomly wakes up? Is like, I'm going to redo like one of my albums. Why?
why are you doing that? I'm scared. I don't want these like executives to like try to start pushing artists to like remake stuff because of nostalgia. I think nostalgia is a blessing and a curse.
Yeah. And
if this is a new thing in music, I'm cool with it for now, because right now they're all for good reasons. I'm just scared if it ever gets to the point where it's like for money and for a cash grab. That's where I would get worried. Personally.
Well, cynically, like, I can see it happening. But I think as well, so Taylor needed to re-release it exactly as it was for the legal reasons we've given. And Taylor as well, but she also, like, really wants, like, she always wants to give to her fans, and she gave a lot of additional content that gave it, like, real added value. So the bad side of that is artists who just see how well it does and, like, don't even care about any additional value or any value out of it, but just see, like, oh, money grab. But then the other side of that is people who don't need to be as tied to the original material. Like, would you be interested in an artist redoing a whole album, but very differently, like an acoustic version of it, or that more suits their sound now? Like, that could be, I think, somewhat interesting. I don't know if it's something that where the music industry needs to go, but could at least be fascinating. But I do think if you look at like revival culture, which is massive, it is due to the nostalgia of millennials at the moment, also possibly due to like the pandemic and the fact that the world is on fire, and like apparently people get like a lot of comfort out of like reruns.
Yeah.
So when we have like the Friends reunion or all of these revivals that we're having or movies being remade, not that it's like a new thing, but I think like it's really going to come into its own as even bigger, because people are like, oh, this thing I already love, that's easy to just like give me basically comfort food. And it's happening a lot in TV and movies, not as much in music, but Taylor's success in this endeavor might be leading the way on that, which is fascinating. And also, yeah, possibly really negative if it just gets like commodified. So possibly this is like the start of something really bad. Like, she, again, like, it's not on her, because she absolutely has like a very legitimate reason, and it was a really smart idea. But like, you would hate for someone else to just be like, I want to top the Billboard charts, and I had an album that did, and now it will again. Like, that would be interesting.
All right. Well, Shannon, it has been fantastic talking to you. This was a very fun session. It's specifically, like I said, I feel like I'm a temporary. I feel like there's, I can't call myself a full Swiftie yet, but I feel like I can call myself an honorary one, you know, so.
Are there any songs that you're going to go back and like?
Oh, absolutely. Wait, let me tell you which one I added to a couple playlists.
I want
to
know.
I added Forever Winter, and I added Message to the Bottle. Definitely, I added both of those to my playlist. I actually do a playlist for this podcast too. I'm probably going to put Forever Winter on there. So
good.
I was like addicted to that song. So that's definitely.
I agree.
Will be returning.
My issue with Forever Winter was, so I put it, I'm like, let me like get used to the music, put it on, and I like to like read the lyrics as I'm doing it, so I can like really know what she's talking about. By the first chorus, I was like completely in tears. And then like, I could not listen to it for like days without crying. And now I think that's where I could listen to it without crying. But I'm like, I love the song, but I also don't want to cry right now. In terms of like the old stuff, like I do think like if we're going to, you know, some of the main stuff, like 22, that was just like an anthem for anyone in their early 20s. And it continues to be, I think, like one of the best pop songs. Red, the title track, is like also, I think, just like a perfect song. So those two as well. But yeah, I for my bachelorette party as well, we all dressed up as like different eras of Taylor Swift. And they dressed me as Red Era Taylor. So this is like, and as well, like the thing is as well, and this is an important thing about re-releases, is like I don't know that other albums are so, or other artists are so like situated in like era culture, where like Taylor, because it was, her music was so different, she really like defined the eras. Like, you really have to have something like pretty defined to go back to. And Taylor, like, to the point where we were like dressing up as different versions of her, she can kind of go back to that, and like you feel like you would right back there. So other artists have to have that like really like strong.
You
sense
gotta just be marketing. Like, you gotta really be like established, like a Drake or Beyonce or something that like you never fell off. Like, I think Adele might be able to do that at some point too.
Maybe. Yeah, Adele, like, she marketed it by age, so it's kind of the eras define themselves. Taylor like marketed it in every way. Like, it was music style, it was aesthetic, it was the tours. They were all like, you can just like, I could see a frame from any tour of Taylor's concerts and be like, this is the album. Like, it's so identifiable, which like you really need to be able to go back to. So not everyone could do it, and definitely not everyone could do it successfully. I'm now kind of like worried about like how this will mix with revival culture. It's not how I wanted to come back. But I love the album. I'm glad that you enjoyed it. I hope people know a little bit more about Taylor Swift right now, or I don't know, for the fellow Swifties, could just kind of like also just enjoy it going back down memory lane, because I know that the album means a lot to a lot of people. Yeah, and it means a lot to me. One of my favorite albums ever.
Well, thanks for coming to talk about music with me. I'm honestly, like I said, I'm honored. I got to talk to Shannon.
I'm very excited. I'm honored to be on the second podcast of Oxford Approved. This is such a fun time. And it's so great that like RHAP is doing a music podcast. I feel like that's just been like lacking, that we haven't had that. So this is so fun to be on that. And also to just, as I said to you, I'm like, I'm just going to word vomit 13 years of Taylor Swift fan. And I feel that I did. I was like, let me tell you why this song made me cry. Let me tell you why this song made me cry. Not this one. Also, I was crying.
I literally said, Shannon, I can't wait for you to carry me in this podcast because I'm going to need it.
No, but I feel like it's good because, I don't know, hopefully everyone at every level of Taylor Swift fandom got something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go back and listen to the album. Not the old album. Don't give money to Scooter Braun. That, you know, that's not what we, but you listen to this stuff. And
Shannon, where can people find you?
I'm at Shannon Gaitz, Gaitz, on Instagram and Twitter. Just covering Survivor at the moment, as I always am, and also an episode I'm recording later today with my brother Jason Gaitz. So yeah, it's been a lot of Survivor. It's fun to like also talk about something else right now, as much as I love talking about Survivor. I definitely feel like I'm known for my Survivor fandom and that passion, but like Taylor Swift as well, like my super fandom for that is probably has almost been up there. Again, I was in a tribute band, was wearing a wig, and we went far. It went very, very far. So I'm glad that I got to like unleash that side of my personality. That's also very important to me.
All right. And also, I think it's just cool to just like, you know, I think because Chappelle said this too, like it's cool to like take a little break from talking about TV and talk about like music or something like different, you know. So cool. But for myself, you can find me at 8BallBangers on Twitter, Instagram, and all that other fun stuff. We will be back next week to talk about another album, obviously. I mean, I have some in mind. I don't want to announce them until they're out, but I got some cool stuff with some cool guests coming up. You can also find me at The Silent Podcast on Twitter, YouTube, Spotify, all that other fun stuff if you want to hear me talk about television as well. So until next time, thank you everyone for listening, and we will see you next Monday. Have a good one. Bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
In my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.